What is Demystifying Research? Hosted by me, Kelly Harris.
And me, Catherine Hoyt.
Demystifying Research is a space where we dialogue on training, careers, and all things research.
Everything from is research right for me to thinking about applications, mentorship, which research degree is right for me, handling failure and rejection, CVs versus resumes, and funding. This is a space where we engage in discussions around the questions we all have or have had when considering a career in research and science.
As clinician scientists, we seek to answer questions and address issues that aren't clearly addressed in more formal spaces, things that weren't addressed in our clinical training, questions that we may not know how or where to begin to seek answers. This is not a space only for scientists and researchers, but for anyone who may be interested in science and research. We're so glad you've joined us. Let's dive in.
Welcome everybody who's joining us live on YouTube or here in person or listening at a later time. We're so glad that you are joining us for this conversation for First Fridays in OT Research, focused on those next steps. So if you are a clinician, an OT clinician, or maybe you're in another field, but you think that research might be that next step for you in your career, and you're wondering about what those next steps are, that's what we're going to be talking about today. My name is Catherine Hoyt, and I'm an occupational therapist and early intervention provider in St. Louis, Missouri, and my area of research is on early identification of developmental delay, specifically with young children with sickle cell disease and perinatal stroke. So now I'm going to hand it over to Kelly, my co-host, to introduce herself.
Hi, I'm Kelly Harris. I'm an assistant professor in the program in occupational therapy. And my research interest is in chronic disease and educational outcomes. So I primarily focus on asthma and sickle cell disease and looking at how complications of those conditions impact youth educational outcomes. My clinical background is actually as a speech pathologist. So I'm glad to be here. I'm going to pass it to our guest, Emily, who's going to introduce herself.
Thank you, Kelly and Catherine, for having me join you today. My name is Emily Kringle, and I am an occupational therapist and a visiting research assistant professor in the Department of Medicine at the University of Illinois at Chicago. And my research interests, or my research focuses on behavioral interventions to reduce sedentary behavior after stroke. And I'm really excited to be here today. This is one of my favorite topics to talk about.
We are so glad you're here today to talk with us, Emily. I know that you've had some experience talking with people at different universities and in different programs about this idea of transitioning from clinician to a research scientist. And so for everybody that may be listening, you may want to check out some of our previous videos. We've had a few videos with First Fridays about what a PhD is, what it looks like, what your day-to-day might look like, or what to consider when you're applying to PhD programs. But what are the things that you can do as a clinician maybe to get started in research, or as you are thinking about what that PhD might look like? So Emily, I'm wondering if first, if you can tell us a bit about why you became interested in pursuing a PhD.
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. When I talk about kind of my journey, I talk about a couple of different things that sort of piqued my interest. So I didn't go into research right away. I actually trained at a university that really focuses on clinical education and doesn't have a lot of clinical research happening. And so I didn't really get exposed to research careers until later. So, but at the same time, we took evidence-based practice courses, we took research courses, and I remember that being really interesting. I just didn't know what the next step was. And so then when I graduated and was practicing, I had all these clinical questions coming up that I couldn't find satisfactory answers to in the literature. And so it was kind of at that point that I realized that if nobody else was going to answer the questions that I was in research, that maybe I needed to do something about it. And so that's kind of when I started shifting over to exploring and trying to understand a little bit more about what my next steps might look like.
So you said that you were a clinician and you started having those questions, you know, about your clinical practice. What was that first, those steps that you were just referring to? What did you do when you started having those questions?
Yeah, I floundered for a while. so I, one of my professors from my OT degree had told me early on, like, just start making a list of questions that you have, because that might be helpful someday. And it really was. I find that today I'm answering a lot of the questions that I had written down. But I did some other things too. I was involved in AOTF, the American OT Foundation. And I went to conferences, and I was involved in AOTA, the American OT Association. And I started talking to people from other universities. I actually got to know a lot of people from WashU who were involved in research, you being one of them. And I was able to start to get a little bit of a vision for what a career in research might look like. I think it's this sort of unwritten thing. I get a lot of questions when I talk about research careers in OT now related to, like, how do you get paid to do that? Right. And that was a question that I had, because I didn't know how to transition from clinical practice, where you bill for the services that you provide and you get paid for the services that you provide, and what that even really looked like in research. And so I got to know more about some of that culture by talking to people who were researchers. So those are probably the main things that I did. I'm trying to think if there was anything else.
And you talked about, like, that interest in kind of beginning to explore what a research career looks like and talking to other people. Did you look into other PhD programs, or, like, I guess, what were your first steps as a clinician having those questions, besides maybe making that list that you mentioned?
Yeah, I mean, I talked to people. I mean, I didn't even, I remember sort of an aha moment where someone said to me, just so you know, you should not pay for your PhD. And I thought, how does that even work? And in within that conversation, they pointed me to some ways to find researchers who had research funding that could support me as a PhD student. So I looked around, like, I paid attention to some of the articles that I was reading that were related to my kind of area of interest in stroke rehab. And I looked at who the authors of those articles were. I had people that I was talking with, especially people that I was involved with within AOTF. I talked to them and I told them that I was interested in a research career, maybe, and learning more at least about what that might look like. And they gave me the names of specific people that I might be interested in talking with. I asked some of them if they would make the introduction for me. I think I was a little bit anxious about just emailing someone out of the blue and just being like, hi, I'm a random OT that has no research experience, but I'm interested in research. I didn't know if they would get back to me or not. And so I did ask some people to make, like, an email introduction, and that helps to facilitate some of the conversations.
Emily, one quick follow-up, you know, so thinking, like, from your position now, having done that and being faculty, are there different things that you would do or additional things that you would recommend in that process?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's interesting to think back, right? Because you don't know what you don't know. And at the time, I didn't even really know that there were ways to get involved in research as a clinician without having a PhD or being a researcher. And so I think maybe as an interim step, it might have been helpful for me to try to get involved in a research lab. I was in the Twin Cities at the time in Minneapolis, St. Paul area. And so it might have been a good idea for me to find find researchers at the University of Minnesota that might have involved me in their lab. I think, too, the other thing that I didn't know at the time is I was so, like, in my head, I was so OT focused that as I was kind of looking around to see like what research opportunities there might be, I didn't think to look outside of OT. And so, I mean, the field of OT is small and research in OT is an even smaller kind of, smaller group. And so I know that it's, you know, it's important, I think, for people from all across the nation to be able to get involved in research. I think we all bring such unique perspectives, but it can sometimes be kind of tricky to find those ways to be involved, you know, T research specifically within your local region. But we do have kind of a broad range of skills that there might be opportunities in physical therapy research or rehab science is more broadly research or education-based research, speech pathology research that might have been an opportunity to get involved as well. I don't know. Does that answer the question or make sense?
I think so. I know Kelly, I don't know if that answered your question, Kelly, but I think it did. I heard a couple of things that I just was wondering if maybe you could talk about a little bit more. One, that you emailed, you just like kind of, I call it like cold emailing, like without an introduction, a few people. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about what did you ask? What were those things when you were emailing those people? And was it received well? I know, hopefully, yes.
Yeah, it was received really well. So actually, I did my PhD at the University of Pittsburgh with Dr. Elizabeth Skidmore. And the email that I sent to her was one that I didn't have a previous connection for. That was a cold email. And I started off, I think I just introduced myself that I'm an occupational therapist. I'm interested in learning about a career, in pursuing a career in research, and I'm very interested in her work and the PhD program at her university. Here are a couple of the areas that I'm interested in, and I was wondering if we might be able to schedule a phone call or to connect to talk about it. And I remember hitting send on that email and thinking, oh, she's never going to get back to me. She's a busy, famous scientist. And within like the next morning, I think I had an email back from her that said, sure, why don't we meet? You have time on Thursday this week. And within a week or two, we had talked. She had given me a lot of things to think about. I think one of the things that I did when I was talking with people, with potential programs and faculty mentors, was I asked them that if they were in my shoes, who are the other researchers that they would be talking to? And I did ask Dr. Skidmore that, and she gave me the names of several other researchers whose work also might be of interest and aligned with my interests. So that helped me also to kind of connect in the field. But it was very well received. And I think most OT researchers are very friendly and highly committed to helping the next generation of researchers develop.
I think so. I think that is something, though, that varies a little bit, that I would also want to add, don't be discouraged if somebody doesn't reply, because sometimes people are on sabbatical or they're not currently taking PhD students. So they just, you know, see the request and maybe don't like it. Definitely happens the other way around, too. That sounds like a fortunate experience. I'm wondering what kinds of questions or like what questions did you have and what were you at? Like, what did you ask Dr. Skidmore when you met with her, when you were thinking about that research career?
Yeah. So I didn't know much at all about research programs or PhD programs when I first started talking to people. I had looked online and I remember like looking online and thinking, I remember I didn't attend a clinical like a clinical program that really had PhD students around or research labs. So I remember looking online at the curriculum and thinking like, this still doesn't quite tell me, like it tells me what classes I take, but they sound pretty broad. And so I asked a lot of questions about what types of experiences or classes I might take, the anticipated timeline, the funding, since I had been told by others that I shouldn't pay for a PhD. And I think one of the things that I didn't ask at the time that I really lucked out with, but like looking back, I should have been more concerned with, how do people fund their PhD dissertation research? So like asking questions about, funding, timeline, the types of opportunities, the research that's happening in the lab that I'd be able to get involved in. I'm trying to think what else. I think I asked about like this, like if it was more of a like cohort, like would I have peers and a network, classmates per se, or if it was kind of like less of a cohort sort of model, and the number of students that that they take every year. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Oh, and I did ask, like as we got further along in the discussions, I asked if I could talk to others who had graduated from that program.
That seems like a really good idea to ask, to like talk to alumni of different programs that you're interested in. The other thing I heard you say before this was that you could look beyond OT for your PhD.
Yeah.
And just looking at, you know, you, me, and Kelly, we all have a bit of different backgrounds. Kelly is, I don't know if you can talk, Kelly, if you want to say how you came from a speech therapist to occupational therapy. I don't know if Kelly can unmute now. Maybe she can't. In any case, well, Kelly came from speech therapy, did her PhD in education, and then is now in OT doing really participation-focused research. If she comes back, then we'll hear from her. And like, I'm in OT, but ended up doing my PhD in rehabilitation and participation science is the name of it. And the other thing that I kind of wanted to get into now is other types of experiences that you could do to prepare yourself to apply for a PhD program, because it can be competitive. And you and I had a bit of different experiences, no worries, Kelly, on how we like applied. So, you know, how do you make a how did you make yourself to be a competitive applicant, Emily? Or did you not worry about it?
I don't think I worried about it. I think, you know, I was involved in national level OT associations and foundation programs. And I think that's what made me competitive. And, you know, Dr. Skidmore and I have had a couple conversations sort of later on. And I remember her saying to me during one of the conversations, I could tell you knew what you were getting into. And so like during our interview, when I interviewed with her, one of the things she asked me was, why do you want a PhD? And so being able to talk about, being able to connect, like what having a PhD would let me do in the end was more important than just like having a PhD, right? Like I wanted a PhD so that I could answer these questions, make a difference in my patients' lives. And so like, I think for me, it was that I could show that I had that understanding of what I would do, that I would use the PhD in kind of the way it's intended to be used in that case. I'm trying to think if there was anything else.
I think that's a really good point though, that like when you're doing a PhD, it's like a co-investment. You're investing your time and several years of time in that training, but that program is also investing time and money and resources in you. So they want to know that you know what you're getting into. And whether you're able to say that verbally, like how you just said it so nicely, like why were you pursuing a PhD? I don't know if maybe I'm a little embarrassed, but when I started mine, I think maybe part of the reason it was so tough for me the first year was I didn't have that clear, like why, what is the job that I want with this PhD? And and you need to know that. Do you need this PhD for this job?
Yeah.
And that you want?
I will say that I did not define it that clearly at the time, like far from it. I definitely sort of fumbled around because I still didn't really know what I was getting myself into, if I'm completely honest.
I do think that's what like programs are looking for though. And I don't know, Kelly, if you would agree with that, but like they want to know that you have some idea of what you're getting into. So having some experience, either, you know, either could potentially be beneficial for demonstrating that you know what you're getting yourself into, because it's not, I don't know, how would you describe your PhD experience, Emily? Sorry, go ahead, Kelly.
Oh, no, I was just going to jump in and say, not only kind of some idea of what you're getting into, I think none of us know what we're really getting into until you're in it, right? Like,
true.
I mean, it's like nice in theory, but that's not life. But I think the kind of why PhD and then why here? Wherever here is like another big question. And I think it's something programs want to know. And so I think it goes back to like taking the time to figure out that answer by exposing yourself a little bit, which is kind of what you were talking about earlier. Like what are the different, you know, talking to people, maybe doing some kind of research coordinator role or maybe getting involved at some level. But yeah, because I don't think we know what we're getting into. I mean, if we're being honest, we have an idea. But like our idea is all of the, you know, the shiny, pretty things sometimes.
So true. So true.
Now that you're at this stage in your career, Emily, you know, done with your PhD, you've got a faculty position, What would you recommend to other people who are considering that transition from clinician to applying to PhD programs that might be helpful?
I mean, I think that I think kind of exactly what people recommended to me, right? Talking to people, if there's a way to get involved in someone's research study, finding that. At the same time, so I graduated from a rural program that if I had been still living in that area, I think it would have been really tricky to find that like direct exposure to research. So participating in conferences like AOTA or ACRM, which is the American Congress of Rehab Medicine, to like really paying attention to the research in my areas of interest and reaching out and talking to people. If you're still an OT student, I know that the AOTA and AOTF, what's it called? Is it the Summer Institute for Future Scientists? I've been lucky to be involved in that program as a panelist a time or two over the last few years. And I think like the first time I attended that or participated in that, I thought, oh man, I wish this had existed when I was a student, because I think it would have moved me into a faculty position, or not a faculty, a PhD research training program earlier. So getting involved in that or other national leadership or state level leadership opportunities that really give you an opportunity to interact with people that are leading the research in our field. And also starting that list of research questions.
So on that really quick kind of, I know we're wrapping up soon, but in terms of that list of questions, I'm just curious, did your interest, you know, you said, you know, you weren't exactly sure what you wanted to do when you first went in. And so I'm wondering how, if that changed at all over time, and if so, how? Like, you know, I think one of the things I thought about going in is like, do I have to know everything about what I want to do? And do I have to like stay that road no matter what? Or is there an opportunity to kind of figure it out as you're going and maybe make some changes?
Yeah, I love that question because my list was wide ranging. And when I went in, even like when I looked back a couple of years ago at the email I had originally sent. And at the time, my interest, I thought was more around cognitive assessment and cognitive assessment when there's a language discrepancy between the therapist and the client. And I also included that I was interested in participation and engaging people in healthy, active lifestyles after stroke. And, but that was kind of, in my mind, that was sort of a secondary interest. And I was really interested in this, this idea of cognitive assessment and engaging across language barriers. And so it definitely evolved over time. And now, like looking back, what I'm doing today is more connected to some of the work that I was doing as a clinician around kind of a wellness hospital to home transitions program that I had developed during my clinical role. And so I think that like my interest in health and wellness was sort of there as a clinician, but I didn't think that that was going to be my primary research interest until kind of circled back during my dissertation and was like, oh wow, I guess I am like that, I guess this is kind of the thing that I'm supposed to be researching. But I can tell you, I mean, I also had questions about vision on my list. I feel like there was something else that I had at one point in time. So it was wide ranging, and it definitely evolved and continues to evolve as I go.
Now I see, I'm just noting the time, and I see Whitney Harris here too, who I know from CoChat. And I was just wondering, Whitney, if you have any questions for us or any questions for Emily that you'd like to have us talk about or that you'd like to talk about?
Gosh, this was all such great information. I'm really just processing a lot of it. But I appreciate this so much because this is exactly where I'm at, is where I'm a clinician, and Kevin, as you know, I'm starting to think about that, like, okay, I'm possibly getting a PhD as my next step. And I guess just for me, the thing that you said about, oh, yay, I inspired the topic, awesome, was the asking the, like, writing down the questions that you have. So I have a very broad sense of, like, what I'm interested in. And so it sounds like that is very common, but I like that idea of, like, starting to write down the questions. It's a great next step. But yeah, I guess I don't have any questions. That, like, a lot was answered right now, and I feel like this was super, super helpful in thinking about what comes next. So I thank you all so much for doing this.
Let us know if anything comes up. We'll have another topic.
Sure.
Basically, you know, just reach for the stars. You can do it.
And ask all the questions, even if it's just by emailing us or whomever else, right? Like, all of the little questions that come up.
And I think there's,
Oh, sorry,
Emily. I was just going to say, like, I just had lunch with Carolyn Baum, and, like, one of her, sorry for this truck in the background, one of her, like, pearls of wisdom was, you really have to network and get to know everybody as a scientist, that, you know, when in a role as a research scientist, so much of it is reliant on collaboration and mentorship and getting ideas from other people that, you know, this, I think, is a great way to think about starting, writing down your questions and emailing and ask all of them.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Emily, do you have any parting words of wisdom or anything from, or any other thoughts that you'd like to share with clinicians interested in becoming a scientist?
I don't know that I think the biggest one is asking the questions and knowing that, like, no question is too, I don't know. I always felt like my questions might be too naive, or like, I didn't, like Kelly said, right? Like, none of us really ever know quite or at all what we're getting into. And, the research world is a different culture, and there's a lot of sort of unwritten ways of going about it that people just seem to know. And as a first generation college grad, I didn't know any of that. And so I think sometimes I, you know, didn't ask the questions that I maybe thought were too naive. And so, yeah, just asking all the questions, both writing down clinical research questions and asking questions along the way.
And then I'd say for next follow-up video to watch, we'd be thinking about mentorship and all the different types of mentorship, and how to pull those people into your circles, peer mentors, near peer mentors, senior mentors, super senior mentors, you know, all those kinds of things.
Thank you for joining us today. Check out our other episodes to hear more. You can find the first season on YouTube under Washington University Program and Occupational Therapies channel under the First Fridays for OT Research playlist.
And more episodes of Demystifying Research linked under the Research tab on the Washington University OT webpage at ot.wustl.edu. That's ot.wustl.edu. Send us your ideas for future episodes at demystifyingresearch@wustl.edu.